Welcome back to another episode of the GPP. I am your host, as always, Mr. Squat Daddy himself, the father of all things squatting, bringing you the knowledge and practical takeaways to improve your own general physical preparedness. Season 2, Episode 9, and like always, it's a doozy for you. Before we get started, a special shout out to the sponsor for our show today, Gifted Wellness, for all of your corporate wellness needs, whether that be challenges, health, nutrition, training coaching, employee retreats, appreciation events. Gifted Wellness has your back. Before we really get into things here, make sure that you rate and review it. Wherever you're listening to this, just rate it, review it. It's awesome. It's fantastic. 5 stars, thumbs up. Whatever it is, subscribe, do anything that you can to help get this podcast out to as many people as possible. When you've done all of those things, just copy the link, send it to a friend, and be like, hey, you got to listen to this. It's the best new podcast out there. The best new old podcast currently in season 2. That work? That's a pretty good tagline right there. Smooth, rolls off the tongue. Also, if you're on YouTube, just subscribe. Follow us over on Instagram. Check out our website, gifted-hq.com, if you're a new listener, to get all the information about our services. Some big projects that we are working on, some things that we've got coming up in the pipeline right now. The biggest one, and it's one with very limited spots left, 3 spots left as of this recording, is our Gifted Disconnect, our big, large-scale, longer retreat getaway of 2024. We've got something else cooking up. We've got something brewing that's a little bit shorter in duration, but our Costa Rica trip, so our Gifted Disconnect for the year, is 10 days, all inclusive. You're going to get things like team workouts, competitions, excursions, food, team meals, education seminars, all of that included for one low price of $1,500. The link will be in the show notes if you want to check that out. If you want to come and disconnect with us, basically do all the things that you normally do at home, which is eat good, train, enjoy time with your family and friends, and separate from all that other stuff like work and stress and all that nonsense. This show would not be possible without our sponsor, Gifted Wellness, who is obviously putting on our retreat this year, and our Gifted Express $30 a month automated training coaching. Best training programs that you can get on the market, delivered in a mobile app format for $1 a day. Choose between bodybuilding, powerlifting, weightlifting, lifestyle, whatever best fits your needs and interests. Choose that. You get a full year of programming at your fingertips. $1 a day. You're spending $30 a month on 3 coffees from Starbucks. Ditch the coffees, get into the Gifted Express. All right, let's get into the meat of our show now. A little bit of memery. So, memery and news section. So, you guys know this section as the one where in the past I've used naughty language to describe it. Silly expletive. But I'm changing my ways. We're just going to call it memery. Name could be in development. Soft launch on that name right there. All right, Jake, the first memery silly beep of the day is going to be something that I was sent actually just yesterday. So yesterday I was sent this. I was asking my team group chat, Team Squat Father, join the team, get in the group chat, don't miss out. I was asking them, what's some silly stuff that I can put on the podcast this week? And someone sent me, you know, the benefits, negatives, pros, cons, if you will, waist trainers. Before I could even answer, the majority of the squat children are like, waste of money, waste of time, makes your wallet lighter, all of those good things that we like. And the response from the individual was to send the current Miss Bikini Olympia, which I believe is Jennifer Dory, pronunciation on that last name, I'm sorry if I said your name wrong, but Jen Dory, I had posted a picture, or someone sent a picture. I can only find it in our story. So on our story, Jake, this is the image in the folder, it looks like she's got slim tum. is tagged here as the company that makes this waist trainer. Waist trainers have been getting absolutely annihilated by exercise science, communicators for quite some time, right? It's been common knowledge for as long as I have been in the industry that waist trainers do nothing. They're a waste of your time. They're a waste of your money. If anything, they could actually be harmful if you tie them on too tight. They don't really do anything. They're not going to change your anatomy. When you are wearing them, your waist will be smaller. So a lot of times people will say, oh, people used to wear corsets. And, you know, that was really popular. And almost every woman of means wore a corset. It's like, yes, because they were wearing corsets underneath their other clothes to achieve that small waist. So the small waist that you achieve is only there when you're actually wearing the product. Outside of that, you're not going to see any changes. So I'm sure that all of you who are listening to this are well aware of this. You've been a listener to the podcast for quite some time, I'm sure, and you understand that there's no real benefit in terms of fat loss or changes in waist circumference, hip circumference, when wearing something like this. But that's not going to stop people from coming to you and asking you, you know, what are the benefits? Why do so many people wear them? Miss Bikini Olympia is wearing one. We see women in the gym wearing them all the time. Why are they actually doing it? And remember that if someone comes to you with an insane question, it's not your job to answer that question for them. Your job is to try to lead them to an explanation as to why it would work. If I go outside and I say, can you explain why the sky is green? And you look up and you're like, the sky's blue. What is he talking about? It's not your job to explain to me why the sky isn't green and it's blue instead. It's my job to explain to you why the sky is not blue, common, well-accepted knowledge, and it's actually green, contrary opinion backed up by almost nothing. Same thing goes with waist trainers. Someone comes to you and says, hey, can you explain to me why waist trainers don't work? Nope, not even going to waste my time. Can you, person who came to me with the question, explain to me how they do work? What is shrinking? If your waist measurement is truly getting smaller, something needs to be shrinking. Something needs to be getting smaller. If you go from a 30-inch waist to a 26-inch waist, something had to have gotten smaller. So what does a waist trainer do that's making your waist smaller? Are your internal organs getting smaller? Nope. Is the width of your pelvic crest getting smaller? Nope. Is your skin shrinking? Nope. Skin's pretty thin. I don't really want it to shrink anyway. Am I squeezing my organs closer together? Is my rib cage getting smaller, getting more narrow? No. None of those things are going to be able to be shrinkable, to be shrunk by this piece of cloth that you're essentially tying on to yourself. So remember, when you see someone wearing a waist trainer, are they affiliated with the company? Are they financially incentivized to promote that product? And if you go to my Instagram, at the Squat Father, you'll see that I posted something similar today as of recording this, Thursday the 1st. You'll see I posted something similar about fat loss supplements, fat burning supplements. You see tons of people advocating for the use of fat burning supplements. But when you say, hey, how do those actually work? Break it down. How does something like L-carnitine, CLA, yohimbine, green tea extract, if the vast majority of the research on the subject shows no benefit whatsoever, or a very small benefit that doesn't justify a $50, $60 price tag, why are you promoting something like this? And there's two possible answers to that. Either one, the person who's promoting it has no idea how it could ever actually work. Ignorance, that would be an example of ignorance, is not an excuse in this scenario. If you are someone who is advocating for the use of supplements and you simply put, don't even know how the supplement or supplements as a whole affect human physiology to create the outcome that you're looking for, that is not someone that you ever want to look for advice from. The second possible scenario here is this is an individual, just like the waste trainers, who is financially incentivized to promote that product to you. There's a discount code. You know, they own a supplement company. They own a supplement shop. They sell supplements out of their basement. For some way, somehow, they're making money off of you. I think number two is worse there. I can forgive someone for being ignorant and stupid. I can't forgive someone for knowing that it doesn't work, banking on you, the consumer, being stupid enough to just listen to me without doing, you know, 5 minutes of Google searching, and then I make money off of that. That's predatory. That's messed up. Those are also people that you don't want to look for advice from. So the fitness industry will never, ever, ever, ever. We can complain. We can gripe. We can groan. We can myth bust. We can post memes about it. The fitness industry will never be completely rid of products like this and of individuals like this. The best that we can do is teach the end consumer, as many end consumers, that's you, as possible, to make informed decisions about the products that they're putting in their body. Best case scenario, these products aren't helpful at all. Fat burning supplements, waist trainers. Worst case scenario is they're actually bad for your health. So we saw this with the rise and fall of SARMs. A lot of people just were taking SARMs without any knowledge of what it was influencing in their body. These are, for the most part, you know, oral steroids, weak versions of oral steroids that are affecting HPTA axis. So affecting sex hormones in one way or another to create a response. Most people simply didn't know what they were getting themselves into. A lot of supplement companies, advocates for supplements, people with discount codes were pushing those. They had no idea what was going to happen onto people who had no idea what was going to happen, and their health suffered because of it. So that's worst case. We definitely don't want that. So teaching people to advocate for themselves, do their own research, that's really where we want to get to. That's true empowerment of the individual on the end of that, on the client, athlete, whatever you want to call them, perspective. That's true empowerment right there. That's what we aim for around here. Hopefully we provide exactly that. All right, done with waste trainers. Let's talk about program design and how influencers simply don't have any understanding of what creates an effective training program. Jake, this is the screen record RP replay.
This is a split I use that turned me from a fat dude to a fit dude. About an hour a day for 5 days out of the week. 5 hours total.
We start the week off with legs, unfortunately. Then we hit shoulders and go to back, then chest, finish off with arms because you've earned the right to do so.
Throw in abs, forearms, calves, cardio. It does not matter if you are bulking or cutting, it's the same sequence. Not mixing and matching several different muscles in a day. We want to go in hyper focus on our days. Phase one, the moment we enter inside the gym, we are going to work out for strength because we will never be more fresh inside the gym than the moment we walk inside. Second portion of the lift is for muscle growth. This is where we take each exercise to failure, complete failure, not fake failure. The third and final portion of the lift, and it'd be isolation. This is where we empty the gas tank completely. Your body will take form and give you the body.
So this is a video that came across my Explore page probably a couple months ago. I screenshotted it and I just remembered to go back to it. So it comes from a fellow named Uncle Rami, who is giving us the blueprint for 1 hour to a Hercules physique. So this guy has a fantastic transformation, amazing transformation. Remember, some people succeed completely in spite of themselves, promoting a 1 hour workout 5 times a week. That's fine. That's reasonable. I don't have any issue with that. 5 hours total. I think that that is very, very reasonable. I don't think that when it comes to purely resistance training, cardio is another part of the equation, but when it comes to purely resistance training, I don't think that 5 hours a week of lifting weights is too much or too little. I actually think that's probably a sweet spot. 5 to 7 hours a week is really good. If you're going above that, I would ask why. Like, what's the reason for going above that? Oh, you know, I'm training in this specific style and here's what I expect. Okay. But Uncle Rami here is advocating for what most people would consider a true bro split: legs, and then, you know, back and shoulders, chest, and then finishing off with arms because you've earned the right to do so. That's weird. Oh, okay. Throwing in abs, forearms, and calves as needed, as well as cardio. So no actual prescription of reps, sets, exercise selection, no program design variables whatsoever. And I get that reels are short form content, but I think that there's a lot of people, exercise science communicators, who do a good job in that 60 to 90 second window, getting those program design variables in there. No mention of that. Just work out an hour, five times a week. Here's how you split it up. Throw in some cardio. Now he's saying, no matter if you're bulking or cutting, you're going to use the same workout split. The workout split that he proposes is dumb, but he's actually correct here. What he's saying now is actually intelligent. So no matter if you're bulking or cutting, your resistance training routine should look roughly the same. Now, because he is advocating for a traditional bro split, it's important that we mention the research that shows that a 2 times a week frequency up to a 3 times a week frequency of training body parts outperforms 1 time a week. But something that I'll throw in there, and this is kind of something that I've changed my mind on over the past couple of years, is the importance of frequency per week. So if we're equating volume throughout the week and we're getting our 10 to 20 sets per muscle group per week, a bro split versus 2 times a week, 3 times a week, probably very small differences in terms of the results that you can expect. But with splitting it up a higher frequency, you can train lower volume per session, get higher quality work done with that lower volume. But that's nitpicking there. So this is kind of where he's a little bit wrong. So he's saying that you really don't want to mix and match muscle groups. You don't want to train several different muscles in a session. But he doesn't, you want to stay hyper-focused, he says, on our days in the gym. Not necessarily true. Staying hyper-focused can occur across multiple muscle groups. Plenty of individuals that are doing full body 3, 4, 5 times a week that aren't having issues with focus. I would honestly make the counterpoint that it's easier to focus on getting the most out of a muscle group from a mind-muscle connection standpoint when you're only training 4 to 5 sets of that muscle group in a workout. So I do 3 sets of barbell bicep curls, I do 3 sets of preacher curls, and I'm done with biceps. My biceps are fatigued, they're pumped, and the mind-muscle connection was strong there. If I were to extend that and do, you know, another 4, 5, 6 sets of other workouts, other exercises for that muscle group, I may actually start to lose focus on that just because of the overlapping fatigue from one movement to the next. All right, now we get into the crux of the video where I think that this is one of the dumber, like just poor understanding of program design and how the body actually works within a training session. So he says, phase one, the moment we enter the gym, we're going to work out for strength. Never be more fresh than when we first step in the gym. Correct. That is correct. However, there's no real definition of what working out for strength here is. And the video that he shows is him doing like a set of what looks like 5 or 6 on incline dumbbell press. So while this is a movement that's going to increase strength, this isn't what we would consider the true definition of absolute strength. When we think absolute strength, we think 1 to 3 reps, you know, high percentage of a 1 rep max. We don't think about incline dumbbell press. Is he getting stronger here? 100%. Is he training for strength here? When you show a physique transformation, no, not so much. So for someone who's seeking hypertrophy or body transformation, do you need to start with a strength movement or training for strength when going in the gym? Absolutely not. You're going to get strong as a proxy, as a byproduct of traditional resistance training for mostly hypertrophy as a result of that. You'll still get stronger. So you don't have to go in there and think, okay, I got to train strength right away when I get in there. Got to work up to a heavy single on back squat or a, you know, a heavy double on bench press. Not a prereq, not a requisite. You can do it, definitely not necessary. He then goes into the second portion of the lift is for muscle growth. So again, strength training, traditional strength training will build muscle. We see this in the fact that power lifters, people who train for absolute strength as their main output, are some of the most jacked individuals in the world. So again, This is someone who doesn't understand the physiology of training outputs working as dimmer switches rather than on-off switches. So this is an individual that thinks, okay, I walk in the gym, I flip the strength switch on. Everything else is off. No hypertrophy, no endurance, no pump, none of that. When I get to the second part of my workout, I flip off the strength button and I flip on the muscle growth button. Again, not how it works. Strength training will make you jacked. Hypertrophy focused training will make you strong. There's overlap between here. These are dimmer switches, up and down, not on and off. Also says that this is the point where we and shows a video here of himself, it at least looks like, going to true muscular failure. Again, we don't need muscular failure as a requisite for muscle growth. Majority of your muscle growth occurs in that zero RIR, zero reps in reserve, so actual failure, to 2 to 3 reps in reserve. So do we need to be training to absolute failure to grow muscle? No. The closer you are to a beginner, the more that's true. The further into your career, the more advanced you get, the less that's actually true. So for a beginner, 3 to 5 reps in reserve, perfectly fine for growing muscle. When we get more advanced, we want the majority of our training to fall in that 0 to 2 RIR rate, repetitions in reserve. So again, another one. We get into our muscle growth part of the workout and we train to complete failure. Again, intimidating to people who probably don't have a lot of experience in the gym, unnecessary. For beginners, training to complete failure usually means significant degradation in your exercise technique, which then ramps up that injury risk. So again, not necessary there. Third and final portion of the lift is going to be isolation. So strength, muscle growth, train to failure, and then isolation. He shows himself doing the exact same exercise at the exact same intensity. So he's still doing a chest fly and going to failure. Empty the gas tank completely. Your body will take form and give you the body of your dreams. From a gas tank perspective, we're talking about energy consumption during training. The hardest resistance training sessions that you can do, we're talking about high volume, failure sets, large muscle groups, not incline dumbbell bench and chest flies, are going to show 40 to 50, I'll even be conservative, and I'll say up to 60% depletion of muscle glycogen, aka your gas tank. So there is no emptying of the gas tank required for a transformation, required for muscular hypertrophy. And on top of that, you're not going to be able to empty your gas tank. And third to that is that energy expenditure during a training session does not reflect the effectiveness of that training session. If you wanted to truly empty the gas tank, deplete as much glycogen as possible, the way you would train is all out, failure every set, large muscle groups, tons of volume. Is that a great way to grow muscle long term? No. I think everyone would just say no, that's not the way that you want to do it. So again, when you consume content like this, understand that this is an individual who has gotten great results, but the great results that he has gotten have not been a byproduct of his own knowledge, his own expertise, or his own understanding of human physiology. I encourage you, when you see content like this, after watching a video like this, so you're a little bit more in the know, you understand the physiology a little bit more than most, ask some probing questions. What do you mean when you say empty the gas tank? We only expect 40% glycogen depletion even in our hardest resistance training sessions. You'll either, one, get blocked. Two, these are individuals who are often very hot-headed, guru mentality experts who have the information. They'll degrade you. They'll say, that, you know, it's like, you show me your physique. Well, why do you look like crap and I look good? Or three, they just won't answer those. So, Uncle Rami, not your best work here. Very impressive transformation, though. Very, very solid. It's just a matter of fact that you didn't transform because of your own knowledge of resistance training and program design. But that doesn't take away from the fact that very Very, very, very impressive transformation. All right. Now, getting into our next section here, looking at some posts from the gifted team. So within our team, I have challenged all of our coaches to post one text format, meme format, video format, piece of content per week. Secretly, I'm going to use that on the podcast as talking points. So our first one here, Jake, it's on the outline as our first one, comes from your boy, the squad father himself. So this is something that I'd heard in passing at the gym the other day. I heard someone say, I need to lose all of this body fat. And me being someone who takes things very literal, I just take people what they say. I need to lose all of this body fat. And my internal dialogue said, well, no, you don't, because you would die. Getting below essential body fat is starvation and you would die. But I think this speaks to a greater point in that a lot of people are under the impression that body fat at any level, at any amount, period, hard stop, is bad for you. That is kind of the common misconception, but it's what's preached out there. Body fat equals bad. Muscle mass equals good. Muscle mass up, good. Body fat down, good. But there are a lot of very important physiological roles that body fat plays. Body fat, here's the thing. We've evolved over thousands of years to be the most efficient possible organisms for survival. There's a reason why we have body fat, why we have adipose tissue. So some of those physiological roles, you can see it on the graphic here. Storage and release of energy, the reason why Forrest Gump was able to run from one side of the country to the other and then back is because he had large amounts of energy stored in the form of adipose tissue. I'm not calling Forrest Gump fat. From what it looks like in the movie, he's actually like a very normal individual, probably somewhere in the 18 to 21% body fat range. And his running economy was great. He wasn't labored or anything like that. So I think he was lower, but it's still the largest storage form of energy in the body for all males. Also insulates us from cold, cushions of soft vital organs in that visceral depot. Regulation of appetite, hunger, cravings, and maintenance. Energy balance. Have you ever been extremely lean? If you're like a contest prep bodybuilder and you're watching this, you know that body fat plays a very important role when it comes to appetite regulation. And when it is low, appetite is through the roof. Insane. Some other ones contributes to immune function. Individuals who are chronically over-dieted or low in body fat are more prone to upper respiratory infections, things like flu, just compromise immune function as a whole, and metabolism of sex hormone, sex function as well. Again, if you've ever been extremely lean, you know that sex is the last thing on your mind. And I think that the overarching idea here is that happiness for me, because it's promoted socioculturally, that a lean body, a lean individual, a smaller individual is a happier individual. I think what people see when they read into that is they think, happiness for me is in the smallest, leanest body possible. And that is not true. That is an individual that if they hold that belief, they need to go talk to a contest prep bodybuilder or a bodybuilder who has experience with true contest prep, getting actually ready for show and say, hey, how happy were you at 2 weeks out from a show? And they will laugh and they will say, I was unbelievably miserable. The amount of misery that I felt was like nothing I could ever imagine. It's like a huge wake-up call. It's like, but you looked so good. When we get to those extremes of body fat, I would say extremes of body fat are like 5 to 9% for men, like 10 to 15% for women. There's really a host of negative side effects that greatly impact how the individual feels. You have rampant, out of control, and persistent hunger. It doesn't go away. It doesn't matter what you do. It doesn't matter what you eat. You can eat high volume foods, high fat, high protein, doesn't matter. You're hungry, and what's driving that hunger is the low body fat. Until body fat comes back up, you're not going to experience any staving or any satiation of that hunger. It's just going to be there. little to no energy throughout the day. Most contest prep bodybuilders will tell you that they'll get 1 to 2 hours of decent energy throughout the day, and they have to use that for, you know, training and cardio. The rest of the day, they're pretty much useless. You're cold all the time. Your sleep is terrible. Think about it from an evolutionary biology standpoint. If you're very, very lean and very, very hungry, your sleep is going to be poor because your body is going to tell you, wake up and go find food. Like, go eat something. This is why night eating for a lot of bodybuilders near the end of the diet is very, very common. A subconscious cue for them that at some point they really don't have a ton of control over if willpower is low. And little to no sex drive. Put that a piece of cheesecake, a pizza, sub, pub sub, whatever you want to throw in here, is probably more sexually appealing to you, or is more appealing to you than your significant other. And then, of course, subpar training quality. So you'll be weaker as a result of losing muscle mass, losing contractile tissue, downregulation of nervous system function. When you get to those low body fats, you're basically just zombie walking through your sessions doing the best that you can. And I don't think any of us really want that. I don't think any of us are like looking for that in training. So those are the things that are actually waiting for you at those low body fats. Happiness isn't number 6 on there. Take a couple good selfies, get a bunch of likes on it. You're happy for about 15 to 20 minutes. And when that dopamine runs out, you're just extremely hungry again. So here I put together a body fat percentage spectrum for both men and women. The bottom is cut off for women because I wasn't paying attention when I posted this, but I should. 3 to 5% for men, necessary to be in contest shape. Completely avoid it. Absolutely not where you want to be otherwise. 6 to 9% is your naturally lean individuals, need genetics on your side. 10 to 20-ish is where most of us are going to want to hang. Most men, gen pop men, want to hang out in the like 18, 19, 20% range. Health will be good. Energy levels will be good. Sex drive is good. Hunger is not out of control. Your training performance is awesome. You're building muscle very effectively, which is what we want for 90, 80, 90% of the year. You can see how those numbers change for women down below. 8 to 11 being stage lean, 12 to 18. You can read through that. So the idea that a lower body fat percentage is where you're going to find happiness, which I think is rooted in the body dysmorphia that's natural to the fitness and bodybuilding industry, is largely pushed, consumed, and believed by individuals who have never been to those low body fats before. As soon as you've done a diet that takes you down to those body fat percentages, whether it's for contest, photo shoot, or otherwise, then the light bulb goes on. You have this aha moment of like, aha, I see. That's why everyone was talking about how not fun that is. Now I've experienced it. I don't want to be that hungry again. I don't want my sleep to be terrible again. I want my training sessions to be fun and productive. I want to be strong. I want to feel good in the gym. I want to have decent sex drive. I don't want my sex hormones to be tanked throughout the year. And most of us will find that in the 10 to 20-ish range for men, which is absolutely a lean and healthy physique, and 19 to 28-ish, just a little room there, of course, for women. Again, that's where health, performance, all of that is going to be at its absolute best. So I would recommend, if you are like listening to this and saying, well, what's my body fat percentage? I would recommend staying away from like the handheld, the impedance, the BIA, bioelectrical impedance analysis, the hand grip thing. I would also stay away from the 4-electrode one, the in-body scan. Those are essentially random number generators. What I would do, and if you need help with this, please just message me on Instagram at @_squatfather. I'll teach you how to 3-site skinfold yourself to get some more accurate numbers there, and some numbers that you can like look at over time that would be more reliable than your in-body test. The next piece of content that was posted this week that I wanted to highlight was from my good friend. I just want to say, if I was ever to go back and do a bodybuilding prep, I would 1000% hire Jason. 100%. The_complete_meathead on Instagram. If you don't follow him, this guy is one of the best, most knowledgeable, most insightful, experienced, natural bodybuilders on the face of the planet, whether he admits it or not. Jason's post was simple. The caption is a little bit longer, but the post itself is simple, but it poses a very, very poignant question that I think not enough people are actually asking themselves when they undertake a fat loss, health promoting, muscle building diet, nutritional plan, whatever you want to call it. So the question is, why should you have a plan for your nutritional intake? Perfectly good question, but I think that a lot of people are shooting from the hip on stuff like this. They say, well, I eat reasonably healthy. I think I eat around 3,000 calories. I'm pretty sure I get 200 grams of protein a day. And Jason says, because if you have to make a decision on what to eat in real time, you'll probably make the wrong decision. And that could not be truer for so many reasons. The number one reason that I see people do this is when you are left with a number of choices, especially around food intake, you'll usually make the wrong one, quote unquote wrong, because the foods that we choose, if we are left to our own devices, are extremely tasty, high in calorie, usually the combination of high fat and high sugar. They're very easy to overconsume. This is why we have an obesity epidemic today. But zooming out a little bit, I think that this is such a good question because you can take the average American, overweight or not, and say, okay, do you have a plan for your finances? Yes, I paid this much for my mortgage, this exact amount for my mortgage. This is the amount that I use on credit cards each month. I know I have this amount of money going in. I know I have this amount of money going out each month. I've got it tailored to the number, to a T, perfectly, and I never change that. Fantastic. Love to hear that. Love that financial literacy. And I love that you're being reasonable about that. How about when you are studying for an exam? You want to get an A in a class. Studying for an exam. Do you have a plan? Yes. You know, I read through the textbook first. I highlight the pieces that I'm not super familiar with. And then I read through the lecture slides that my instructor provided for me. I make sure to make notes of what I think I'm confident with, what I'm not confident with. Then I go back to the text and I read through the highlighted parts. Did the slides help me learn more about that? Do I understand those things now? I do. Fantastic. Well, my instructor also provided me some sample questions. Let me work through those sample questions. And then I've got a couple lab sheets or worksheets to do as well. And that's usually the order that I work through it in when studying for an exam when I want to do well. You're going to get an A. You're going to crush it. I 100% approve of those study practices. Let's talk about your nutrition now. Do you have a nutrition plan? Do you have a meal structure that you follow each day? Nah, I kind of just wake up and I usually skip breakfast. And then when I have lunch, I try and go for something healthier. You know, I try and choose something that's like high in protein, I guess, but I'm not really worried about the rest of what I eat. And then dinner, it's kind of just whatever is out there and whatever's cooked. Do you prioritize your health? Is your health important to you? Yeah. Is your health as important to you as your finances? Oh, yeah, for sure. How about, is your health as important for you as doing well in your classes? Oh, yeah, 100%. My health is extremely valued to me. Then why are you shooting from the hip with your nutrition? Why do you have no plan? Why are you waking up every single day with zero plan on how you're going to execute your nutrition, which makes you live longer so you can make more money financial and provides you with the energy and nutrients needed for your brain to function as good as possible, do well on your exams? So it's like this huge disconnect. Like, finance is great, school, awesome, marital life, terrific, hanging out with your friends, all that stuff is structured beautifully and planned. When it comes to nutrition, I just wing it and then I say, wonder why I'm not in good shape. I wonder why my body fat is 30%. I wonder why I feel like crap all day. The answer is right there. Treat your nutrition planning, like Jason is insinuating here, treat your nutrition planning the same way that you treat your finances, your studying, your love life, all of that other stuff. You're freaking posting on social media. You probably have a better social media posting plan. I post on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 9 a.m. than you do with your nutrition plan. So I really liked this post from Jason. I think it was simple. I think it was very, very simple, but I think it was eloquent. And I think it asked a question that really got people thinking deeper. At least when I shared it on my story, I had a lot of people message me, made people think deeper about their nutritional planning as a whole. Those were our two big posts there this week. Again, if you want to see more posts like that, make sure you're following all of our coaches on social media. We will link all of their social media accounts down below. Just take a look. Make sure you're following everyone and engage with their content if it speaks to you. Don't just message me and say, hey, I really like this post. I didn't post it. Jason did. Go message Jason. Go engage with Jason in the comments if you have questions. Those are our posts from this week that we are going to extrapolate on. Hey, don't forget that we currently have our Miami Gifted meetup at Old Bull Athletics. And afterward, we are going to VasaSir. It is live now on the store. We'll put a link for you to click. $50 entry fee. That includes a group workout, a Q&A session with our coaches, one drink and one appetizer at VasaSir. And I have heard that some members of our congregation will be going out for some festivities afterward. If you don't want to miss out on something like that, if that sounds fun, maybe if you just want to learn a little bit more, make sure you click that link so that you can see exactly what we're throwing down at our first gifted meetup of the year. Into our client highlight of the week. So we are going to start a segment called the Gifted Athlete of the Week. Guys, I'm still working on Gifted Athlete of the Month. I want to get those shirt designs out there. But for now, we're slow rolling into it. Gifted Athlete of the Week is Oriana Heligman. Oriana worked with Carolyn on the training side and myself on the nutrition side towards her first half marathon. So, and Jake, you can throw the quote up here from Oriana. Oriana said, I've always had a deep respect for runners. Full disclosure, she was not a runner going into this, had not run long distances before. Running is a sport that requires so much discipline and grit. I've run in the past without really following a program. This time around, I wanted to do it right. I had a very personal goal to reach after having two babies, mama too, back to back, and other crazy things life threw their way. I'm sure that sounds familiar to a lot of people. I used Carolyn's 16-week training program, which I love because it didn't have me running every single day. Mama three over here. So she recently had two kids and then has an older one as well. But I noticed such a huge difference in my endurance week after week. Carolyn was amazing, always there to answer any questions I had, which were many, and to give me the confidence boost I needed. I felt prepared going into race day, although the weather conditions were not ideal. I think it like downpoured on them. It was not a fun day to run. I was mentally prepared to conquer those 13.1 miles. I followed the program. Can't wait to do it again next year. There are rumblings that she'll be dragging Aaron, her husband, along with her next time around. Carolyn's response to that, her quote, Jake, you can throw that up as well. Being 33 weeks pregnant myself, hearing Oriana's reflections and watching her absolutely crush this prep made me excited to see what I can do in my own postpartum journey. She also gave me the best advice. Take care of yourself first so you can take care of everyone else better. Can't wait to see what you do next. Love to hear that. I think that's such a wholesome interaction. That's such a wholesome piece of what we do at Gifted. You know, our mantra, our creed has always been all performance, health, and fitness needs under one roof. I think Oriana is a great example of that. She came to me shortly postpartum. She said, I want to get my pre-baby body back. Went through a fat loss phase, was incredibly successful, got stronger, got healthier, got fitter, got leaner during that. And then she reflected internally and said, what's next for me? How about a half marathon? I said, Carolyn's the one to talk to. She's got her template. Boom, template. I handled her nutrition and her resistance training on the side. She gets through the half marathon, something that she never expected she would be able to do. And her kids and her husband and her coaches, her community, her friends, could not be more proud of. So our athlete of the week, Oriana Heligman, everyone take a second round of applause for our friend there. All right. As always, we will end these episodes with our deep dive into the mud, the muck, the deep blue, not even blue, deep black sea of Reddit. All right, Jake, first question that I took is 4708. Our Reddit user here talks about being weaker in a surplus. So his question, his or her question, is about feeling weaker in a surplus. So I think that this just underpins a poor understanding of what drives strength in the gym. Calories, outside of situations where they're incredibly low to the point where they are reducing your energy level, reducing glycogen stores, reducing substrates that you can use to create energy or training, which is very rare that we would get to this point. Your calories, again, outside of those extreme circumstances, are not going to drive your performance in the gym. I see this all the time, and it drives me up the wall. You'll get someone who's in a surplus, gaining weight. They'll go to the gym. They'll have a bad session. They'll say, I didn't even have carbs this morning. Fucking are you retarded? Are you an idiot? Are you dumb? Are you simple? Can I shake you? What is going on here? So in that scenario, if you are in a chronic calorie surplus, a single training session is not reflective of energy availability for that day. You can get stronger in a deficit. You can get weaker in a surplus. It is 100% a false attribution, meaning that you're drawing you're Charlie in the mailroom, drawing up lines all over the place and stretching out yarn all over. It is 100% a false attribution to say, if I eat more, I'll be stronger. No. Zero. 0 out of 10. I award you no points. And may God have mercy on your soul. Becoming a larger person, having more muscle mass, increasing neuromuscular efficiency. These are things that make you stronger in the gym. Long term, those can be driven by caloric availability. But if you are weaker in a surplus, I 100% guarantee you it has nothing to do with the calorie amount. And it has everything to do with your training program. You're eating enough, your program sucks. Sign up for the Gifted Express. Hire a gifted coach, you'll do better. Think about it this way. If more calories equal being stronger, 1 to 1, I eat more, I get stronger. Think for a second. Who would be the strongest people in the world? Who eats the most calories in the world? Morbidly obese individuals. How strong are morbidly obese individuals? They're actually very not strong. They often have very little muscle mass. So again, calories does not equal strength. If you're in a surplus and you're getting weaker, it is a result of your training program, not your energy intake. 4708, bagged. Let's do 4709, Jake. 4709 is all about working out after dinner. A lot of us, dinner is our largest meal of the day. Appetite peaks in those evening hours, so dinner is often where we eat the most. So the question is about working out after dinner on a full stomach. So work out, eat full stomach, then go work out. Not a lot of context here provided in terms of the timing. So I'll look at it from a more general standpoint, a zoomed out perspective. Are there side effects of working out on a full stomach? No, not really. Chances are it's a non-issue. But it depends on how full we are talking. That's the question that we have to answer. If we just had, let's think about the times when we overeat the most. It's probably like Thanksgiving and Christmas dinner, right? Thanksgiving, Christmas dinner, maybe our birthday. Birthday, we overeat as well. Thanksgiving dinner, wait 30 minutes, go work out. Are there going to be negative side effects? Probably. In that scenario, probably. Eating to absolute pain, meat sweats, not going to have a positive impact, and you may actually revisit that meal as a result of throwing it up. Especially if you combine that with a very high volume, high intensity. So full turkey dinner, go train high volume, high intensity legs, very good chance that you're going to throw that up. I don't think that's the question that's being asked here. I think the user here is asking a question of like, if I eat a light dinner that doesn't make me completely stuffed, and then I wait a reasonable amount of time, 30 to 60 minutes, and I go work out, will there be negative ramifications? Will there be ramifications? Will there be negative circumstances from that? And the answer is probably not. Depends on the individual. Some people can tolerate eating and working out sooner because their digestive system works faster. Some individuals are the inverse of that. And then there are certain meal or macro combinations that you do not want to have directly before training because they slow down digestion. A very high volume, high fiber, high fat meal will take significantly longer to work its way out of the gut. And a meal like that is more likely to give you some bloating and negative GI side effects if you go and train directly after. Remember that training is going to divert blood flow away from digestion to the working muscles, so that food is essentially just going to sit there. So again, wide spectrum here of what to expect in terms of eating a meal and then directly going and working out. For most, it's a non-starter. It's a non-issue. If it's a problem, chances are it's a problem that you've experienced before and you know how to avoid it. I ate a meatball sub from Subway. I went and worked out 15 minutes later. I threw up. I'm not going to do that again. It's a do it once, learn your lesson, never do it again kind of scenario. Can't see someone being like, well, you know, I waited 15 minutes. What if I wait 20 minutes and then going and throwing up again? Well, 20 minutes wasn't it, but what about 25 minutes and then throwing up? That's something that you do over and over. It's a quick, I learned my lesson, I won't do that again kind of scenario. 4709, bagged it. Let's go 4710. Artificial sweeteners. The question is about artificial sweeteners and insulin resistance. A lot of conversations about this. Tons of conversations saying that artificial sweeteners will spike glucose, will spike insulin, will cause long-term insulin resistance. Much like our friend Uncle Rami, this is just people talking about things that they don't truly understand. So let's talk about the etiology of insulin resistance. Let's talk about how blood sugar works first. The way that blood sugar works is as follows. I eat a meal that is high in carbohydrate. My body breaks down those carbohydrates. They are absorbed into the bloodstream as glucose. My blood glucose goes up. The anterior pituitary, the brain, then senses blood glucose is high, sends a message to the pancreas. The pancreas secretes insulin. Insulin then binds to muscle and fat cells and transports that glucose into the cell where it can be stored either as triglyceride in the case of fat cells or as muscle glycogen, the storage form of glucose in your muscle and your liver. Pretty simple, right? You can follow that. Not too much to get confused about there. So let's take a look at artificial sweeteners. Artificial sweeteners, zero calorie. Artificial sweeteners, do they have glucose in them? They do not. They have glucose in them. If they had carbohydrate in them, they would have calories, to which they do not. I ingest artificial sweeteners, and people will say, because people are stupid, that my blood glucose goes up. What are we talking about here? What are we even saying? How would my blood glucose go up? If I chew sugar-free gum that has zero, truly has zero carbs in it, and I don't eat anything else that contains glucose, why would my blood glucose go up? Where is my blood glucose coming from in that scenario? People think because I eat something sweet, my glucose goes up. Wrong.
Wrong?
Wrong. Straight up. You're just wrong. It's not true. It's not how these things work. So people will say artificial sweeteners. Glucose goes up. Insulin goes up. Wrong and wrong on both accords. You're wrong, but at least you're consistently wrong. And consistency is an important trait to have. So what actually drives insulin resistance? Inactivity, sedentary behavior, poor diet, high body fat. Those are the big ones. Does stress drive insulin resistance? For sure. Does elevated cortisol play a role in insulin resistance? Absolutely. But the biggest drivers are the ones that I just mentioned. And the ones that I just mentioned, to bring those back, inactive, not resistance training, sedentary lifestyle, poor diet, high in processed foods, high in processed calories, high in processed, just high in calories in general, hypocaloric, if you will, hypercaloric. Wow, I'm a fool of myself. Hypercaloric and high body fat. Those are the biggest drivers of insulin resistance. When you rectify those, it's amazing how much more sensitive people are to insulin, to carbohydrates. Type 2 diabetes, the ultimate insulin resistance, poor glucose metabolism disease, can completely be rectified, completely be cured in most individuals by losing body fat, losing weight, being physically active. Boom. There's your biggest case for how insulin resistance actually works. So points here to be made are that a sweet food does not equal elevated blood sugar. Because artificial sweeteners are sweet, that does not mean that they elevate glucose, because they don't bring any glucose with them. Imagine coming off of like a 5-day fast where you didn't eat anything, you only drank water, and then you had a piece of like sugar-free gum, and your glucose is like through the roof. What the hell? What the heck just happened? How does that even work? So just because it's sweet doesn't mean it elevates blood glucose. And rewind a little bit, go back to those real factors behind insulin resistance. Artificial sweeteners are not driving insulin resistance. That does not mean that the subset of the population that is consuming the most artificial sweeteners does not suffer from insulin resistance. Because there are a lot of sedentary, very overweight, obese individuals who are insulin resistant and consume a lot of artificial sweeteners, but it's not artificial sweeteners driving that. It's all the other things before that. So again, another, if you will, false attribution. In this scenario, A does not equal B, because there's something in the middle that's actually causing B, but you're hyper-focused on A and you want that line to be there. Just cut out artificial sweeteners, I won't be insulin resistant anymore. I won't have to lose weight, lose body fat, go to the gym, be more physically active. Sorry to rain on your parade, but that is not the case. That wraps up our Reddit question for the day. 4710, ship out. If you haven't done so already, please, please leave us a review wherever you are watching this. Leave us a review, 5-star, subscribe, send this to your friends, leave a comment for your friend when they get here, all of that good stuff. Remember, it is our goal to get this out to as many people as possible so that we can spread the word, the good word of the Gifted HQ family. We promise it is hashtag not a cult. We'll see you on the next episode. Until then, in the meantime, in between times, and as always, stay gifted, my friends, my fitness family. We love you. See you later.